fighting for America.
Here at the home of the team, with the most famous Statue of Liberty play in history, I don't need to remind you that big things happen late in the fourth quarter.
Fighting for Idaho.
We are here fighting for the voiceless, especially the children who are conceived in rape and incest, because their lives matter, just like a child conceived with wine and roses.
Fighting for you.
I came in Monday morning. I was shocked to learn of the news reports about the footballs. I had no knowledge whatsoever of this situation until Monday morning.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Your show always delivers.
Winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
29 in Meridian, and remember, Brian Scott is our NASCAR driver of the day. Tommy Ahlquist with us to talk about economic development, to talk about the city that he loves, the state that he loves. Here at 580 KIDO, I was going to say Tommy, but certainly from the Gardner Company, thank you very much for joining us. I was going to say doctor, but we won't do that. But, you know, you have so much going on in your own life. Why build here in Boise? Why do you think that economic development is so crucial from the private sector?
Well, I think if you look at the kind of the natural resources and all of the elements that make up a city, we have so much of that already with the university, with the river, with the downtown, with the people that are here and the foothills so close by. There's just so many great reasons to be in Boise. And so I think with the downturn, the economic downturn, there was just a lot of opportunity sitting there kind of just pent up and waiting for someone to come in and do some things. So we've been very fortunate to kind of see some pent-up demand come in, hopefully deliver projects that make a difference, that are sustainable and are aware of the community surroundings and harmonize with what's already there. And it's been a great ride so far with 8th and Main, and I think City Center Plaza will just continue that movement of maybe taking the city to the next level with some downtown development.
Well, when we talk about our pluses, it's the best place to live if you have a family. It's the best place to live if you love the mountains and love traditional family values. I guess the challenge is, and it's a blessing, that we're a landlocked island, if you will, and overcoming some of the airport issues probably is big. But besides that.
Yeah, so a little bit about airport issues. That is kind of the barrier to business development here. So for the last couple of years, I actually helped put together a group with Fred Mack of Holland & Hart to try to help Rebecca Hupp at the airport, because certainly every business we talk to or try to recruit here, one of the first things they say is, hey, can you get us more direct flights? If you look at our airport compared to surrounding cities of our size, we actually do incredibly well. We have per capita more direct flights than anybody, and I think we're very well led by Rebecca. In the last year, they've added another 5 direct flights. So that's certainly one issue, is air transportation. The next issue is just economic development, right? These companies come in and they want to make sure there's an educated workforce ready to go. They want to make sure there's favorable business environment to start their company in. So I think as we think about what's good for our community, what's good for families, what's good for people, it is economic development, it's wage, it's education. All these things are so important, infrastructure, to making this place grow and do it in a way that makes sense and is sustainable. That's a big deal for business.
It is indeed. Easier said than done when you're talking about getting more folks to fly in here and convincing the airlines to come in. Certainly that's an ongoing project with you, the folks at the airport, the chamber. I know other folks would love that. You go in, you go to someplace else, whether it's Los Angeles or Phoenix or what have you, and security can be abysmal here. You know, you just walk right in and you're good to go.
Yeah, it is nice. Park and walk right in and go.
Right.
And folks love that. And you know, again, I think we've made a lot of strides with a couple of direct flights to the East Coast, and we'll just continue that push. But very encouraged by what's happened there.
Let's talk a little bit about 8th and Main. How big was the project? And when you first proposed it, people, you know, have said, well, everything that has gone there hasn't worked out. We've got this hole, blah, blah, blah. And you guys made it happen.
Yeah, we had great partners initially. When Zions Bank needed a headquarters, you know, they were going to take 3 floors of the building. That was a great start. It also helped that they were our lender.
So even better, yes.
Yeah. So when you have a partner that wants it to succeed, that was big. But then there were a lot of other smaller relationships, unwinding all the lawsuits that were were there was a tough step. And there were points along the way that this thing could have just gone south so quickly. A few phone conversations, actually, where it almost blew up early on while we were trying to unwind everything, and it just wasn't worth the risk. And, you know, we were able to get through those. And then it's trying to find the partnerships with the other tenants to make a building that big, because clearly you can't take that much risk without about 65% pre-leasing. And so there were a lot of sleepless nights trying to figure out, okay, in the middle of a very early recovery. I mean, we started that when it was still pretty bleak out there. How do you get people convinced that this is going to happen? I remember getting laughed out of a couple of offices, literally just folks saying, this will never happen, and I don't even know why you're in here, in a friendly way, but laughed out.
What caused you and your group and your lenders to continue on with this? Because, again, you're right. Very early on, we you know, in 07, the unemployment in Ada County was hovering around 2%. It was double digits at that time when you started building. But to convince people to say, look, this is going to happen. We're going to get folks in here. We've got the money to do this. We have money coming in from revenue to sustain it. What was the most challenging part of that?
I think internally, you look historically at just cycles, and we knew we would come out of it. And if you look at what was in our favor, that probably made the biggest difference. Construction costs were a low for me, and at least the time I've been doing this. Interest rates were still incredibly favorable. And again, there was enough pent-up demand and relationships out there that we could go talk to people, and they could say, hey, if we had a Class A building right here in this location, we'd come. And so we start building those pro formas and saying, hey, can we make this financially work? Is there a way to put up a building that will be, 100-year iconic building here, the right size that fits, that we can sustain financially early on and for the long term? And boy, we did a lot of pro formas, a lot of back of the napkin and Excel spreadsheets trying to decide how big to make it. There was a lot of debate on that. You know, even today, our partner Kim Gardner, every time he comes to town, he'll say, "I told you should have made that thing five floors taller." And we always just laugh because, we were here trying to find those tenants early on, and sure. I just say, "No, we shouldn't have. It was enough sleepless nights for me."
I bet. And when we talk about Idaho, you've touched on it a little. A big story in the paper today about education funding, paying teachers, and the like. That plays into the business climate. You've made a commitment to build here and to strengthen the infrastructure from the private sector. I guess the challenge is of keeping people like you and others from leaving the state.
Boy, you're right on. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges we face. If you look at education and just and then the jobs that are available. I was at Boise State last week. We had a meeting there with their business department. But you have these kids coming out looking for jobs, these millennials. You know, they want jobs that pay them well, but are also socially responsible. They want to stay in a community like ours.
Right.
But we've got to be able to have enough economic development that we keep them and we keep that momentum going. It helps everybody. I'm on the United Way board. We spend a lot of time talking about education and financial stability for families. Just recently, we took a trip down to Utah and took 25 leaders from the valley down there, and we've seen what the United Way has done in Salt Lake City, where they're making a huge impact on schools. And it's business-led, and the reason why is education's the answer, infrastructure is the answer. If we can get those things rolling, then it just filters up to families and income and allows people to live lives that are sustainable and successful, and they can have enough money to live and be happy.
How much of an influence is a place like Salt Lake City when we're talking about their United Way, our United Way? People always say we're like a mini Salt Lake. Do you find that true when we're talking about the business climate and the can-do attitude?
Boy, I sure hope so. I think when I go down there and I spend some time down there with their leadership, their business leadership, they're a very conservative state, much like ours. Mm-hmm. If you look at eastern Idaho, people always joke it's kind of an extension of northern Utah. So their beliefs, their fundamentals are very similar to ours. But what they've done is they've figured out a way within that, political environment, how do you invest in education? How do you invest in infrastructure? How do you look forward and create a business climate where people can do well and families can do well? So there's a lot to be learned from mistakes they've made and from successes they've had in legislation and in business practice over the years. So I hope we can look to them as a model. Lane Beatty, the president of their Chamber of Commerce, was just up here a a couple of weeks ago and gave a great speech on transportation. And it was another example to me of how they have strategically planned and done a really good job of preparing for the future.
Let's talk about your new project.
City Plaza. We probably should have waited a little bit longer before we dug another big hole. But it's going to be a great project. We knew there was some needs out there, and we were looking for another site to do in downtown. And we could just kept staring across the street at that 1.2-acre parking lot sitting right on the Grove. It required us to go by the U.S. Bank building to get the parcel, but that's been great, too. There's a lot of wonderful tenants and long-term relationships there. But it'll be a great project. When we started it, I always would tell people, there's a way that there's a whole bunch of uses that can come together on this if we can thread the needle. If every star lines up, this could be this great public impact project. And those stars lined up. They did. And all along we kept my analogy I'd use, it's kind of like Legos. We may take one section of this building out and just, set it to the side. It may not work. But we started with VRT, with Kelly Fairless and her team there. They had been looking for a downtown transportation hub for years and had some federal dollars to put towards that and just couldn't figure out a location. When we decided to put that underground, and then we spent a lot of time with engineers. I mean, that's a bold move to stick something like that underground.
Right.
You better make sure you're right. So we went and got kind of the best and brightest, put them to work, and found out that would be something that would function. From there, we went and began talking to Boise State about bringing a department off campus, which is another bold move, I think.
A lot of bold moves with you, I've noticed. Yeah.
They've never had an entire department off campus. So I think bringing that department downtown is not only going to help our project with the downtown, but now, hopefully sets a pattern going forward that Boise State will be part of the fabric of downtown. And then the one we went to the convention center, and we knew that they needed to expand for years. And just initial conversation saying, hey, what if we could figure out a way to get you your program needs? And they'd studied it for years. They knew exactly what they needed. So as we met with them and we just started tinkering around with site plans and said, hey, what if we could put a ballroom and meeting rooms and a connection and make the current facility an exhibition hall? Would this work? And all of a sudden, they were excited. And then, obviously, Clearwater Analytics, our partner in the building, is, there's a great local company, great local guys that have kept it here, want to keep it here, growing like crazy, high-paying jobs, great company. We're just so lucky to have them. They'll be taking five floors. So it's a nice mix of private companies, some public uses in the perfect location in the heart of downtown.
What I find fascinating about it is, the idea of the convention center. Now, I've been here 5 years, but as well as everybody else, is that if you have a modern facility, you're going to attract people. Again, the challenge is the airports, but if you want to have a convention, bring it here to the Treasure Valley, and you can focus on things. You can do some other things downtown, but, chances are you're going to be focused on what you're there to meet about. How much of an economic impact for people that are not familiar with going to conventions, being a part of conventions, will that modern facility be for us?
Oh, I think it's going to be tremendous. If you think about it, there's some advantages to where we sit geographically. We're kind of in the center of a lot of places, so we could be seen as a gathering place, a place to come in and have a nice conference. But with their current facility, they were constrained because they had one facility to meet people in, to exhibit their spaces, and to feed people in. So
right.
They really, really needed to jump to that next level, and they knew exactly what that was. So the numbers are that right now they're able to attract or go after 20% of the conferences, and with this facility expansion, they'll be able to go after 80% of the conferences. Now, obviously, we won't get that many, but they're already incredibly busy, and Pat Rice, it's a very well-run organization, so that to have that – have them have the capacity now to attract more, it should drive business. The next thing we need is some more hotel rooms because obviously, with the convention center, with what we've already got going on with the growth in the valley, that's the next big step, is to get a couple more hotels downtown.
We'll talk more about growth here in the Treasure Valley. 580 KIDO, it's 819. Let's get you to traffic.
Abe Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And don't forget, today our NASCAR driver is Brian Scott. Kevin Miller in the morning. Tommy Alquist with us from Gardner Company as we continue on. You know, we've talked about projects inside the Treasure Valley. Before we get to projects outside the Treasure Valley, as far as private economic development, how strong, from your position, is our economic base here? We've seen properties go up all around the Treasure Valley, home sales rebounding. Hopefully, in Canyon County, they'll get to the levels they were before the Great Recession. But, you know, we're buying a lot of things. Do we have the economic base here, sir, to support it?
That is a great question. I think you have seen real estate rebound. I think the real indicator for me is when you start seeing pay go up for
sure.
folks. And that's going to be, if we've made it back and we're moving the needle, if we're actually changing things, that's going to be the real indicator for me. When does pay start going up for folks? A lot of folks out there working really hard to make a living, and, you know, a lot of parents, dual income families, just getting by, trying to figure out insurance coverage, trying to figure out transportation and jobs and kids. And so I think it's great. We're on the right track. But to me, it's going to be when our pay goes up, our average pay. So I think that's the key indicator I'd be looking for.
And trying to attract the industries that will bring those in. Let's talk a little bit about some of the projects outside the Treasure Valley. As we've said, whether it's Meridian or Eagle or in Canyon County, growth has been pretty good for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, we love Canyon County. We, you know, there's a lot going on in Nampa. We finished in Caldwell too. We finished a 92,000 square foot medical office building in Caldwell last year that's full, and it was just a really great experience working out in Canyon County with Mayor Nankolas and the folks there. We love Caldwell, and the sense of community there is great. And then in Nampa, next month we're opening Library Square, which is a 60,000 square foot library right in downtown with a parking structure, a retail building, and an office building. And I think it will really spark the revitalization and use of downtown. It's a unique traffic pattern there, and I think people will use that location because it's so accessible and you drive by it to get out of town. So And Nampa has been great to work with too. It's been we see a lot of growth and potential there. I mean, you see where those home tracks are going to go, and what as the valley kind of merges together.
Sure.
We see a lot of opportunity in Nampa.
You think we'll see more of that? Because again, before we had the recession, you had so much building in Canyon County. We used to talk about it all the time. Homes valued at 140 at the depths of the recession at 70. There's a big story in the paper about it. Now we see those homes rebounding. And, you know, it's true anywhere. The further out you go, the more money you get for your home.
Exactly. I think the big thing to watch there is interest rates. You watch studies, and as soon as you tick up by 0.5% or 1% or 2%, what does that do to families that are trying to afford a mortgage with the new regulations of how to get a mortgage?
Yes.
I mean, it's so hard. And
right.
So you tick those interest rates up by – it won't take much to kind of slow that growth. So I think it's a little unpredictable now to say, okay, what's going to happen? And I think a lot of that's going to be that balance between interest rate, rebounding economy, and then jobs and revenue that a family has and what they can afford. So I think that's going to be a tricky balance to keep an eye on.
When you're talking to folks and you talk to people that eventually we hear about at 580KIDO or we read about in the paper or see on television, what do you say to sell them on this area?
Oh, my goodness. You know, if most people that come here once,
right.
You think about how many people you know that have come to the Treasure Valley
to
visit or one person moves here, you just can't – you don't want to leave.
Right.
So I think it's so easy to sell the location in the area. Where we have a harder time is when we start talking about educated workforce. We start talking about jobs. You start talking about public transportation. Start talking about things we don't have. Then you have to get by those things to sell the place. But as far as the – you know, the arts and culture and outdoors and livability here, that's a no-brainer for folks.
Well, you know, you bring up a great point when we're talking about an educated workforce. From your perspective in the private sector, your thoughts on what we hear about education funding, paying teachers, that impacts you and everybody here in the Treasure Valley.
Absolutely. It's the key to our success. And if we can have an educated workforce starting early through our primary education, secondary education, and that collaboration between our universities, our community colleges, and the business community, that's the answer. Because when these companies come to town, they want to know, where are we getting our employees from?
Right.
Where are they coming from? And so job one is to keep those students that graduate we have here, And then job two is to attract more businesses that drive more economic growth, which drives more money for education. The relationship goes directly together, and that's what feeds more dollars into the education system if we have a thriving economy.
One thing that I was surprised about, and some folks have told me, is that I don't know if it's a secret anymore, but the amount of software companies and programmers that love it here, have found it that this is a great place to live and their businesses to prosper.
You know, we do a lot with software engineers in Utah. We build a building for Adobe, large building down at the Point of Mountain in Lehigh. We're building a building right now for Overstock.com. And so a lot of engineers, software engineers that we interact with. And so I'm getting a better idea of what they like.
Yes.
And they like great work environments, mm-hmm, where they can collaborate. They like to have that energy of, hey, I love working here. But then what they like is they like to get out and do things. And so you think about the Treasure Valley, and with all of our, you know, outdoor amenities and the great cultural ads we have here, we compete really well for software engineers. If we have the jobs and we have the pay for them, I think that this is a perfect city to have a thriving software engineering environment.
Finally, any big projects that you'd like to break here? Any exclusives that we can get here this morning?
We're really close. We've got a couple of the large things we're working on in Meridian, and we're just excited. There's so much opportunity. We're just trying to assess it all and decide what to do next.
Well, Tommy Alkos, we appreciate it. We'd love to have you back, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much for letting me be here today.
You're listening to 580 KIDO.
Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Gas prices are at an all-time low. Is this the end of Keystone before it begins? They're still debating about it in Congress. Joining us now from Fox News Radio, John Decker. Mr. Decker, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Kevin. How are you?
Not bad. I'm just trying to, you know, first we've got the fracking. We're doing well. Then the Saudis drop the prices. Gas goes down historically, at least the last time that happened was when President Bush left office. Does this impact any of the debate on Keystone?
You know, it really doesn't, as far as the vote that will take place in the Senate this week is concerned. And the reason being is because Republicans are adamant. This is something that should have been passed by the Senate a few years ago when Harry Reid was in control of the Senate. Of course, now Mitch McConnell is the Senate Majority Leader. And a vote, Kevin, is set for this week. It's expected to pass overwhelmingly. But I think the question is, do they have enough votes in the Senate to override an expected presidential veto?
Well, and John, based on your years of covering these folks, what does that mean if they do or they don't this early into the quote-unquote last 2 years, the fourth quarter of the Obama presidency? We'll start with if they don't have enough votes to override the veto.
Well, I think it'll give some sort of strength to President Obama to some extent. I think it will allow him to flex his muscles to announce essentially through a veto that he still has the power, he still is relevant, nothing happens without his approval, given that there's not enough votes in the Senate to override a presidential veto. Alternatively, though, Kevin, you know, it'll be really interesting if both the House and the Senate muster enough votes to override a presidential veto, because I think just the opposite will be true. I think it'll establish the Republicans have arrived. They'll be able to flex their political muscles. And I think that this particular issue, which has been sort of out there for a number of years, will finally be passed, and the authorization of Keystone will go through.
Boy, very early on, if that does happen to the president, what's really at stake here with Keystone? We've heard the arguments, John. What are they saying in the cloakroom?
Well, you know, I think the same arguments that have been said over the past few years are still being said today. And there really isn't a lot of arm twisting, in the sense that at this point in the process, Kevin, I think that the whips for both the Republicans and Democrats have a very good idea about how their respective caucuses are going to vote. For Republicans making the case, they say that this is a no-brainer, that this will provide more oil on the spot market, which will, because of an increase in supply, will bring down the price of oil even more so than it is down right now. For many Democrats, they make the environmental argument, and they're saying that this is something which would be bad for the environment. And, you know, they cannot be dissuaded from holding that point of view. I think that that's going to be a difficult position to have a Democrat switch over and vote with Republicans on once the vote takes place, which will be later this week.
No, it's interesting, as you point out here, John, here at 580KIDO, John Decker with us from Fox News Radio, that if you're a Democrat and you're in maybe a purplish state, you pretty much can vote for this and say, look, I'm for jobs, and count on the president to bail you out.
Yeah, that's true. You know, some of those Democrats who voted for Keystone during that lame duck session at the end of last year are no longer in the U.S. Senate. Mary Landrieu comes to mind. She was one of the people who was pushing for this vote to take place. And if you recall, it fell one vote short of the necessary votes to move forward with a vote. But she's gone now. The senator from Arkansas has been defeated. Tom Cotton is the new senator. He said he's going to vote for Keystone. I think that what you're going to see this week with a vote for Keystone is this issue being put smack right down in front of the president once again, and he'll have to explain why is it when the State Department has said that the installation of the Keystone XL pipeline will create 43,000 jobs. Why is it that you're against this particular economic initiative?
Now, I know, John, it's very early on in the Congress. Have you noticed a change in climate that Mitch McConnell is running things as opposed to Harry Reid? Is it less contentious as the Republicans promised, or is it just, you know, we've just switched to the other side of the line of scrimmage? It might be too early to tell, but, you know, usually when you have a new boss or new regime takes over at work or anywhere else, you know, there is a little difference.
You know, there's a little bit of a difference. I saw that last week with the State of the Union address, and maybe that's not a good judge because I think on that particular night, for the most part, preceding the president's speech, members of both parties are glad-handing each other. But I think beyond that, we saw last week that there were some amendments that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell allowed on Keystone, but then he cut the process short. But the difference is that with Harry Reid, there were no amendments that he allowed on these particular contentious bills, whereas with Mitch McConnell, at least he allowed some to go forward. I think that's a big difference, and I think it changes the tenor of the Senate to some extent.
Finally, besides Keystone, what do you think will be on the docket for the next 2 or 3 weeks that'll impact folks in Idaho and across the country?
Well, you know, you have to wonder, Kevin, you know, to what extent immigration comes up, you know, in the U.S. Senate. This is something that the president has pushed for with executive action, very much upset Republicans in Congress with the manner in which the president did that. But I think that this is an issue that will sort of be out there for the remaining of this term in the U.S. Congress. And you also have to keep in mind, beyond that, on the foreign affairs front, you had that issue happen last week where you had House Speaker John Boehner invite Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to speak to a joint session of Congress, and that very much upset the White House. And I think that issue, once the president comes back from abroad, he's in India today, he'll be in Saudi Arabia. Once he comes back from this trip, I think that this is an issue that will be front and center before the U.S. Congress.
John, we always appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. Have a great day.
You too. John Decker joining us from Fox News Radio. Kevin Miller in the morning. A few things that we do want to talk to you about. Number one, your chance to go see the Daytona 500. The last one that Jeff Gordon will be driving as a full-time driver. I'm going to be sad to see the old 24 retire. Of course, someone else will take that number. You know, NASCAR never retires numbers, do they? I guess if you're a car owner, you buy the numbers, if you will, but they never retire numbers. So good old number 24 will be leaving. But your chance to go for free, very easy. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock when you hear Brian Scott, be caller number 10 at 580-5436, and you'll be registered to win that trip. You can also register to win by going to our All Access Club at 580kido.com. You've heard about Deflategate. What about the 12th man back in Obamacare? Details next. Currently 30 degrees in Star. It is 8:47. Time for traffic with Robin.
Hi, this is Brian Scott, driver of the number 33 Whitetail Chevrolet.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
8:52, Kevin Miller in the morning. The hearing is going on and on as we speak down at the State House, and some of our intrepid State House reporters have actually given us some of the feed to that. So
they would not file a report because I was openly gay. They would not prosecute sexual harassment. That ended up forcing me to leave my state and go somewhere else for employment that I felt safer in. I shouldn't, as somebody that was raised here, I should not be forced to leave because I was threatened and felt unsafe to be here. This is one of the many reasons that I ask that the words sexual orientation and gender identity need and should be added to the Idaho Human Rights Act. Not supporting this is not the Idaho way. Idaho is about respect and dignity of everybody here, and not doing that is showing that you don't care about all Idahoans.
There we have it. A young man saying that he was sexually harassed at work because he was gay. He went to his employer and said, look, I'm being sexually harassed, I guess by another guy. Don't know the real details of this case. And all of a sudden, he decided to leave the state because of those issues. Think about that. Gesundheit. Thank you. Think about that for a minute. The testimony today, very emotional. Does that mean that Idaho should join the politically correct bunch and pass this law? That's why we have representatives. Do you believe that they will represent you? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And tomorrow we will have again coverage of this, plus your thoughts. And unlike our brothers and sisters, or our cousins, if you will, in the press, we're going to give you your chance to voice your opinion. Because the opposition to this bill is still the majority opinion in the state. And look, I'm putting a target on my chest for even saying that. Hard to believe. But you ask some of these folks that have said, look, Idaho doesn't need this. And they've been vilified, ridiculed, made fun of. Again, as we said, as Julie Lindy pointed out from Cornerstone Family Council to us, you know, nobody wants discrimination, yet nobody wants to be a woman, young woman, old woman, middle-aged woman, and walk into a bathroom and a guy walks in and goes, I'm a woman, I'm a woman, I'm a woman. And they have no recourse. Someone who has been molested or abused should have the right to go to the bathroom in peace. If you are a private business and all of a sudden you want to say, hey, we don't believe in this, should you be prosecuted? Look what happened to good old Representative Luker last time. You know, we take a look at this state, and we're very blessed to have good conservative values. And I believe that a lot of people misrepresent silence, not only as consent, but they do their very best to bully and intimidate. And let me give you two examples of this. Let's go back to Senator Winder, who put up a bill protecting the rights of the unborn. MSNBC, members of the Democratic caucus, ripped him, called him every name in the book. And you're supposed to sit back and go, hey, man, that's part of the game. Not when it gets personal, not when it crosses a line, not when you attack people's families, as many people, you know, through electronic emails and such did. Now, Senator Winder will never tell you about that stuff, but that did happen. As we've heard from Julie, who talked about people ripping her and stuff. That's the bullying of the left. They're counting on you not holding up any opposition to this because nobody wants to be called a bad name, or nobody wants to be run from work, or nobody wants to do the right thing. It's better to just let it go. I applaud the people on both sides of this issue. I applaud the people for going against the politically correct tide of the press and saying, we don't want this in Idaho. Now, if this bill doesn't become before the legislature, which I believe that it won't, and it shouldn't, imagine the names that people will be called. Imagine the names of people's families that will be ridiculed and vilified for standing up for what they believe is correct. And isn't that what Idaho, isn't that what America is about? Look, nobody wants people to be beaten up and such, but until this hearing happened, there were no cases that I know of. Certainly the media was sitting there saying, give us something to run with to push public opinion a certain way, right? 1 minute left for Ronnie from Caldwell at 580 KIDO.
Those use the words, people. You know what? Why don't they just stop being a bunch of whining babies and just do what they do, you know? It's pretty weird, dude, but can I let you in on something I saw a couple days ago?
You have 30 seconds.
Okay, dude. People were saying, I wonder why the president came to Boise. But, dude, I was down there watching Air Force One come in because I'm a plane guy. And guess what I saw get out of the plane about an hour after the commotion? Michelle, Sasha, and Malia, and they went to the Boise Outlet Mall.
What'd they buy?
I don't know, dude. But see, those are the things I always get the scoop, and nobody believes me. But
did you follow them, stalker?
I did. I didn't stalk them, dude, but I did follow them to make sure it was them.
Well, you are an intrepid reporter. We have to go, but thank you, Ronnie.
Over and out. 10-4, good buddy.
30 degrees. And latest on Add the Words. By the way, you ever eat your cereal out of a bathtub? Who would ever eat their cereal out of a bathtub while being in the bathtub? That's what one of the stars of YouTube did. Very credible woman who got to interview the president. So, words to emulate, right? Good day. God bless. Keep the faith, y'all.